from this collection of teachings by Hazrat and Ayat Khan on the development of the personality, the subject of the jarring effect of the ego on another, and conversely, the jarring effect of one's ego upon another. By a keen outlook on life, we find that what disturbs us most in life is the ego of another person. It is that ego has a jarring effect upon life. Those who know the right manner of developing personality know that the first lesson in life is to efface that ego as much as possible. But who really wants to? Those were my words, not Mershon's. Christ says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit." That poorness in spirit is the softening of the ego. When the ego is softened in a person, then the thought, speech, and action of that person, there is a charm. Sometimes a person, after going through a disillusionment, suffering, torture, shows in his personality some charm. And that charm has come from the softening of the ego. It's really an interesting thing that he's saying there, because it's the very thing that we want to avoid, isn't it? A lot of energy can go around trying to not have pain, suffering. But I can tell you from direct experience that some of the Tibetans that I've met and know, and I call my friends, that suffered many years, inconceivable atrocities against them personally, in the most humiliating of ways, in prison, are some of the most gentle, real people I know. And when I ask, how's that possible? And I also remember having met nuns that I'm still friends with. Krimagita maybe was even there. And you could see the visible, like, signs of, you know, maybe hard beatings and slaps that split their skin and burns from cigarettes. And they escape. And it's like, how did you survive it? And keep your faith. And they said to me, we had to think of the great conflict that our oppressors had to endure within themselves to by day torture us and then at night go home and kiss their wives and girl children goodnight. And that created compassion in our hearts and our minds to endure it. That's something. That's really something. And for the most part, maybe Sura, also I know you have the Tibetan Culture Center. You probably haven't really met a very unhappy Tibetan, have you?
They laugh constantly.
Constantly.
I asked them one day, one time this homeless was there, they brought in different groups of monks, and there was some Buddhist monks walked in, and the ones from the center walked in, and they were like, their things were all, their roads were crooked, and they're giggling. And then about 2 months later, a monk from Michigan came to speak, and I said, you know, I told him I was quiet, and he goes, oh, I don't know, I never noticed that.
You know, they've asked the Dalai Lama, because we have issues with the self-confidence, you know, and also self-loathing and within our society. And they were trying to ask him the question. Some of you probably have heard this. They don't even have those words. They don't even have the words in their language. They had no way to even convey that concept to him. And he was astounded. Really? You don't love yourself? I mean, you know, it was like, how can that be? I mean, what isn't that interesting? That within a culture, you know, you can have those beliefs and sort of perpetuation of those beliefs, and then other cultures don't even have it at all. So again, sometimes a person, after going through disillusionment, suffering, torture, shows in his personality some charm. And that charm has come from the softening of the ego. But any virtue that develops naturally, forced by life or circumstances, is not a virtue in the same sense as that which hasn't been developed through one's own effort. So being the victim of circumstance and learning is one thing, but also you yourself creating those circumstances for your learning is another. Could someone get the other, or maybe it's here, let me look. There's something else I want to share now. Maybe if you could get that other folder. Because it's a beautiful teaching by Lord Buddha himself on suffering. Seems appropriate, doesn't it? Yeah, let me see if it's in there. It's either here or it's in my yellow folder. And anything I read from, you know, I'm happy to share with people if you are interested. Well, I hope I brought it. If I didn't, it's okay. I'll share it another way. Here it is. This is called The Causal Law in Terms of Happiness, and it's from the Samyutta Nikaya. And it has to do with dependent origination, which is a little bit what the point is can you identify the self? Can you say that there's anything in this whole universe that has been created in and of itself? Or is everything dependent upon everything else? Everything. Nothing has originated on its own. This is a complex concept that we spend years studying, but here it is in a very beautiful, succinct way. And if it's an abstract concept to you, don't worry about it. It enters the mind stream and you'll be seeing things that come that will bring awareness and understanding. So this is from the Lord Buddha. He says, suffering leads to confidence. Confidence leads to rapture. Rapture leads to joy. Joy to tranquility. Tranquility to happiness. Happiness to concentration. Concentration to knowledge and vision of things as they truly are. not as they appear, as they truly are. The knowledge and vision of things as they truly are to repulsion. Repulsion to non-attachment. Non-attachment to deliverance. Deliverance to the extinction of passions. This important passage clearly indicates how suffering can lead to happiness and ultimately to sainthood. You know, I'm the kind of person that if I see a, you know, someone without a limb, I'll say, "What happened?" I don't look away. I find people want to talk about it, you know. Or if I see something dead, I look at it and I absorb that, you know, because that's going to be me one of these days. So I asked the monks, it's like, well, how do you do this without, you know, hoochie coochin'? How's that work for you?
How do you do it without what?
You don't know what hoochie cooch is? Can you imagine? You got the picture. Because the monks are celibate.
Oh.
Connect the lines. Gary's new.
Well,
Gary's
yeah.
new. He's just new. Okay. So because and you know, but the a little hint, yeah. The it's interesting because they are also sometimes very attractive and very virile, you know, and so it's like, well, how do you do this? Because you know, you can see that they have closeness with women, and you know, they've made me all their sister, so that tells you something. They just transform you into a sister instead of anything else. But I said to them, how do you do that? And this has to do with this teaching. They said, we imagine like that we know that we're all going to become, it sounds indelicate, but if you think about things in this way, you'll realize we don't need so many new fancy cars and new fancy houses and new fancy clothes and new fancy people in our lives either. We can be satisfied with what is in some ways. But we imagine, they say it very graphically, you know, like, that the body really is just kind of blood and, you know, bodily functions and excrement and mucus and, you know, and that the illusion is this. But at the very base level, it's all those things. And if you contemplate that, then you just know that we're all doing that and there's no reason to be attached to it. You understand what I'm saying? Yes.
You are talking about the Buddhism.
Yes.
The no selfness.
Yes.
And it's, we are part, as you say, of something. We are related to everything.
Yes.
This question would be oriented to, because you're saying that you are going to talk about our people in this class.
Yes.
And related to the Buddhist culture, which is knowing.
I'm not sure I followed you. I'm sorry. Can you say it again?
The Buddhism.
Yes. I'm using it as an example.
Oh, yeah. But it's basically no ego for them. And they can tolerate all this suffering because they have the Four Nobles. Principles that their mind.
They do train their mind.
There is to train.
Yes.
We are not.
That's
we are not. We are, and they see our world as an imperfect world.
Yeah.
And we are here to suffer. And they train. Okay. From the, and they have basically a spiritual. And we are not spiritual.
We have
human nature, and I attach to my human nature very much.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and they have human nature too. They understand
they
that.
Do.
Yes,
they
of
do.
Course.
It's like these dual things, and even for me, when I studied, it was hard for me to accept or to understand that particular And we have the Buddha inside us.
Of course,
that
of course.
That is our soul.
Yes.
Probably that's the illuminated soul that we are talking about.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Right, but they don't develop the ego.
Well,
constant ego.
Yes, I would agree with you 100%. And all you have to do is turn on the television or go to the movies and you see that development. And our commercial world is driven by that desire nature. We see that too. But you will find sometimes even in the context of that culture, and that's different than ours, but it gives us something to think about and look at. They have the tendency not to even offer compliments because they think that is really, in some ways, will lull someone into some sort of a, you know, ego trip. Interesting, very interesting. I mean, there's something to be learned. And when you, for me, Murshid, and maybe it's my orientation, when I read him, I hear my Catholicism come through, I hear the Buddhist studies come through, I feel the Hinduism. And when you read about or you study Murshid's life, you know that he went to all these places and studied also. He's brought that into this body of teachings as well. May I go on? Thank you. Every beautiful action, thought, or speech is derived from self-effacing. The effacing of self or ego. For instance, every manner of courtesy comes from holding the reins of the ego. It's so interesting how we want to often answer back. To bring in another culture in the Middle East, when I've lived there, you know what people will often say when you say something contrary? As you wish. As you wish. What argument can be there?
Can you read that last sentence?
Yes, I will be happy to. Every beautiful action, thought, or speech is derived from the effacing of the self or ego. For instance, every manner of courtesy comes from holding the reins of the ego. Beauty of speech always depends on the same effacement of the self. Beauty of speech always depends on the same effacement of the self. And so it is with thought. As soon as the ego expresses itself without control, it hurts the ego of another person. The tendency in the lower creatures is to fight is caused by the ego. The tendency in the lower creatures to fight is caused by the ego. And man has this tendency no less than they, but rather more. It is this tendency which brings about disturbances in life of individuals and in multitude. The family feuds in ancient times and now wars all come from the same source, the ego. Boy, those people over there, over that boundary, they have some gold in them hills. I want to go get me some of that. But there are people in the way. Let's kill them. Right? Or sometimes it's just ideals or ideas. People's ideas. You believe differently than me, I just have to eradicate you. So everyone left is like me. And then I said yesterday, Murshid gives that wonderful teaching on what would it be like if everyone had our same face? We wouldn't recognize each other. I mean, he had great humor, but it's like very practical. It's like, do we really want that? I mean, is a garden, when you look at gardens, are they beautiful because they're all the same flower, or are they beautiful because they have variety in them? Is a delicious Indian dish great because it's just full of curry? No, because it's full of all kinds of other wonderful spices that enhance the curry, right? I mean, This is the richness of life. We enjoy that in our senses. You know, a beautiful perfume, that it's a bouquet from different floral scents or spices. But, you know, we still want it the same note. Boing, boing, boing. Just every, can we all start playing the same note? Boring. Okay. But we have wars over it. The family feuds in ancient times and now wars all come from the same source, the ego. The idea of self-denial in Christianity is rightly considered, The idea of self-denial in Christianity, if rightly considered, expressed the idea of effacement rather than that of renunciation. Those whose contact brings us comfort, ease, peace, always has a softening ego. And a softened ego. Those whose contact brings us comfort, ease, peace, always have a softened ego. The greater the person, the finer the ego. No example can be better than that of Christ washing the feet of his disciples.
I have a question.
Yes.
What would be the difference between a soft ego and a weak ego?
I think, now I will say from my point of view, often a weak ego is an ego that constantly wants to justify itself and impose itself on others. That to me is a weakness. But a soft ego is like a, you understand?
Yes.
It moves. Earlier today, Sheikh Rahima gave us this wazifa mantra practice of wasiya. And it is this idea of something that is all encompassing. And that to me is what a soft ego is. It gathers everything in its arms and it embraces it. There's an accommodation for everything. There's not a hard line there. I love the quote that I read. The first time I went to India, I was reading a magazine on the plane. And it was talking about the river Ganges. They call her Ganga in India. And they said, Mother Ganga is not sacred because of her purity. It's because of her acceptance of all. Mother Ganga is not sacred because of her purity. It's because of her acceptance of all. And that's the idea of a softened ego. Yes.
Well, you know, I sometimes think that the soft ego doesn't mean that you're weak.
No.
And that sometimes our visible scars and our visible weaknesses are actually our strength, because once it's there, no one, anyone can do.
I know, and that's why it's really good to tell your worst secret out loud. You know, once you've done that, there's no blackmail that can hurt you. No one can do anything. You know? It's so releasing because, well, guess what? You're probably not the only one. We recently had a really wonderful philosopher. She has worked in classical philosophy. She, you know, was alongside her male colleagues in academia, very well respected. And then she, you know, that's, I always tell my students, if you want to create a revolution, understand the context very well, work within that context, and then once you're in, then you turn it, right? And she did that with philosophy, because she took all those philosophical, traditional philosophical concepts, and she started using them to look at our society and culture, and she's become, you know, world famous in her writings of all kinds of cultural contexts. But one of the things that she said, and she said that to the group, and I believe that's true. I mean, we had been talking at lunch about it, and she said, you know, once you've told your deepest, darkest secret out loud, there really isn't anything that you have to protect. I mean, what are we protecting? What are we defending? I remember Pir Shabda, who wasn't Pir at that time, came to the camp here, and someone asked him, because people are also very funny, like, someone can't wear my shoes or touch my prayer beads or lay on my bed because of their energy. And you know what he said? When the whole world becomes your bed, what can hurt you? Right? That self, this is me and that's you. Yeah, we have to have that individuated self. But really, I think those of us that are here are seeking to understand that in a very healthy way, but also have this, I mean, we keep wanting more love, burning, merging. What? But not with you, not with you, not with you. How does that work? I always say the sun doesn't make that distinction. The sun shines on everything equally. It doesn't say, I like you, I'll shine on you, but I don't like you, so I won't shine over there. You know? Yes?
I keep getting hung up on one thing you read, maybe it's because I don't understand it, so, which is every courtesy is a reining in of the ego. I mean, maybe I'm being too literal, but opening a door for someone is a courtesy, and what if that's part of my ego to feel that I'm courteous?
Oh, well, then that's a very good point, and one would have to be mindful. Let us also remember that I think it's very important, and I'm glad you brought that up, Gary. Murshid was raised in India. And it's a very different culture there too, and I think that we have to sometimes be mindful of that. And there can be, you know, you've heard that expression, killing someone with kindness.
Yeah.
That can happen there, because, you know, people fall all over themselves being, in a false way, gracious. Yesterday he spoke about that too. I'll read you a line that maybe will illuminate this.
So am I being too literal in that thing?
No, I think that's absolutely right. People can be proud in that too. That can be ego, you know. Oh, I'm so pure, I've done so much, or I'm this and that, and I can do this and you can't. That is also a problem for us. There was one line that I thought would be beautiful to share. This was on the aspect of beauty and sincerity. And Murshid was highlighting the fact, the other question of personality is sincerity, and that it is necessary to be considered in the development of personality. There are many people who, in order to behave nicely, polish their manner and speech. But polish is not necessarily effective, or the effective thing in a person. Beauty is that which penetrates through and through. And the greater the beauty, the greater the penetration. What is called manner, which you're talking about now perhaps, which is only manner, is not a deep thing. It is almost a play. Every thought, speech, and action has in it a psychic power, which makes an impression on another. And the psychic power comes from the divine, true divine essence in man. No doubt in the name of sincerity, people often express their lack of the sense of beauty, saying, I'm a frank person, I tell the truth, and I don't mind how you take it. This shows that sincerity, void of a sense of beauty, is a lack of balance. And that beauty, void of sincerity, is lack of balance also. Yeah, just that line. That's a good one, isn't it? This shows that sincerity, void of the sense of beauty, is lack of balance, And beauty void of sincerity is lack of balance also. Okay, back to today's teaching. We have a few more lines to get through. Wow, I'm going to be very determined now and read this. What builds man's ego is a kind of gratification of the ego, and what breaks the ego is patience and renunciation. Again, renunciation is, now I'm going to drive everybody to our website, www.sufimovement.us. You must go and read and listen to Murshid Hadayat's teaching on the ego. It's very beautiful. And he talks very clearly, we're not trying to get rid of anything, but we're trying to beautify it. We're not a doormat. But he did make this beautiful analogy that we talked later. He said, it's really true. Murshida Aziza, his wife, we were walking down the hall, and we noticed that every doormat and doorway that was beautiful, there was a very pleasant and wonderful person that lived in there. And the ones that were unkept, we found that those people weren't so pleasant. You know what I'm saying? That was an example of that beauty, how people present their space or their person, you know? There's something about that, too. Oh, my God, I have to stay on this one. The question whether it would be advisable to so destroy the ego that others might take advantage of a refined person is answered by saying that is not necessary, that one should work against the ego, but one must control it. It would not be exaggerated if I said that man's worst enemy is his ego, his own ego. And when it is not under his control, man's thought, speech, and action are bent towards the gratification of his ego. And the more he satisfies his ego, the more his ego desires. And it is never satisfied. Nobody else has such power in life of enslaving a man as his own ego. Man is, in fact, from the divine essence, and so being, he has the right to be a king of his own life, which is in his own kingdom. But the gratification of the ego makes man fall from kingship into slavery. There it is. The ego wants to enslave us. And in the end, his own life becomes a burden to himself. And in order to gain his own kingdom, he must destroy the illusion that in satisfying his ego, he shows his power. He satisfies his enemy in satisfying his ego. We know this is true. Anyone that's a parent, I'm sure, must know that when you've given up something or perhaps caring for a person that's infirmed. Sometimes it's very hard, but we know also that goes against, you know, we want to go swimming or we want to go do something cool, but when we do it, we know, and we do it with a prayer that I wish to offer this. I wish to offer this part of myself to serve and support and love someone. You know what that does, and I know parents do that all the time. They may sacrifice something so their child can have something. You all have done this for a loved one, for a child, for a parent, for an animal maybe. You know what it's like. And it makes us, in some ways, it makes us feel beautiful inside. We know we've done a beautiful thing.
Definitely is a beautiful thing. There is a subtle line because we need to develop our ego to a certain point, not too much, not too little.
Yeah.
What would be the line between ego and self-confidence?
Oh, I think that's a good question. The question is, Here comes some of my mother's wisdom.
Thank you.
Mothers know. Even if children don't know, they know. They know. She talks about it in the... Are we watching? Are we waiting for applause? Are we... I can tell you personally, whenever I know I've done something good, I always try to remember, I offer this merit for the benefit of all beings. And I try not to say, oh, didn't I do something wonderful? I think about offering that goodness to others. I think that's very helpful. And Mother always says, you know, she's always taught that the true character of an individual is what they do when they're alone, not when they're in front of people. It's what's really in here, what's sincere, you know? And I think that's true because we do, I mean, as Murshid said in the teaching of yesterday, we can have a polished manner, we can appear to be some way, but I mean, some, you know, then we know sometimes that there's this other tyrannical part of ourselves and then it creates conflict. Then we have the schizophrenia, you know, paranoia, whatever that is, sociopathic tendencies. So we are in some ways we're self-monitoring, and here now comes in the reason for having a good spiritual guide or advisor, because everyone does. The Dalai Lama has an advisor, the Pope has an advisor, all the great beings, the President has advisors, question mark. But anyway, you know, we need that reflection, and our guides can help offer that to us, you know. And our good friends can help that too. Like they can say, well, I don't know, maybe it can be looked at this way. It's very healthy. It's very helpful to have that balance. You know, it's balance. And self-confidence is the very thing that can make us do amazing things in our life and for other people. You have to have that self-confidence. That's not necessarily ego. But it's something that can lift us up and give us an inner sense of might and power to initiate and to see things through. I think that's a very good quality. But if one is waiting for applause, first of all, it would be great disappointment because it likely doesn't come. Criticism does. So you have to be indifferent to that. And then you, you know, there's a happiness that can come from that. You know? Okay, a couple more sentences, please. Nobody else has such power in life of enslaving a man as his own ego. Man is in fact from the divine essence, and so being, he has the right to be the king of his own life, which is his own kingdom. By gratifying the ego, man falls from kingship into slavery, and in the end, his own life becomes a burden to himself. In order to gain his own kingdom, he must destroy the illusion that is satisfying his ego, that satisfying his ego shows his power. He satisfies his enemy in satisfying his ego. A Persian poet says, each time I make peace with my enemy, he has the opportunity of preparing again for the battle. The great battle that the Sufis and sages and yogis fight is the battle with the ego. But the sage battles with his own ego, the ordinary man with other persons' egos. And the difference in the result of these two battles is that the victory and failure of the ordinary man are momentary, but the victory of the sage is eternal. The former, when they finished one battle, must begin another. But the latter, once he succeeded, is victorious. All that the former gains, after all, is not his own, because his kingdom is not his own. All that he gains does not belong to him. But the sage is king of his own kingdom. So for today, the rest of the day, if you want homework, think about when someone says something and you feel perhaps you've been misunderstood, is it necessary to answer back? If someone, you know, if someone wants to go before you in the food line, let them eat all the food. Open the door, but with like, I'm greeting you like you are a king, you are a queen, because really sometimes in zikr at night, that's how I see us all. We don't see ourselves that way, but if we could see our kingliness and queenliness, we wouldn't dare utter a nasty word to each other, have a nasty thought, or treat each other in a disrespectful way. And it's a great opportunity just to hold it and offer a prayer for that person. You know, yesterday, and I don't have time for a Jataka tale, but we'll do it another time. It was a great tale about the monkey on the great buffalo's back. You know, and the buffalo was just had complete equanimity. No reaction. Do whatever you want, you foolish monkey. And then the fairy appeared and gave the buffalo a charm. And that charm was for eternal happiness. It's the same story as here. These tales by Nuranisa are wonderful. They're from the Jataka Mala of Lord Buddha's lives, but she's written them in a form that children can read of all ages. Yeah. So, I thank you so much for your attention and your time and your patience and your questions. Can we rise and say the prayer Khatum together? Thank you. O thou who art the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, Lord of heaven and earth, open our hearts that we may hear thy voice, which constantly cometh from within. Disclose to us thy divine light, which is hidden in our souls, that we may know and understand life better. Most merciful and compassionate God, give us thy great goodness. Teach us thy loving forgiveness. Raise us above the distinctions and differences which divide. Send us the peace of thy divine spirit and unite us all in thy perfect being. Pass it along. Can we get the chairs back in order so the next class can come in? Thank you.
Can I?